Welcome, everybody. This is Larry Lawton on The Real Deal and The Real Deal podcast with Larry Lawton, where everything goes and everything is said. And it is The Real Deal for this reason. Whoever comes into this room and in this studio is told this is a no-cut show. So what you want to say, say. And the people I bring on are good people anyway. So they're just going to say their minds, and that's how I feel most people should do it. So today, I got a special guest with me. I got Juan Rodriguez, who's an Iraq and Kosovo war veteran, disabled war veteran, retired right now out of the military. And we're going to get into his military service. We're going to get into it. He's a great guy. He's raised a good family. He was an MP. We're going to get into a little of that. We're going to get into the shit that goes on. But we're going to have a lot of fun today, everybody, and it's going to be where we just find out what people do after they get out of the military, how they adjust, and he's going to tell you, it's not easy. So, you know, you have a hard time. The camaraderie from military to the civilian world is a big fucking difference from being on a ship with guys that'll fucking fight for you and go to the bar to a neighbor that might wave to you. You know what I'm saying? Sure. Well, welcome to the show, Juan.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you.
You're great. I'm so glad you're here. We met, let me tell you, Juan met through a friend of mine, a Rob, who's a great friend. I'm going to bring Rob on. Rob's a banker in the area, and we just clicked, and he's a great guy, and we got some crazy fucking stories with that banker. So we're going to have fun with him one day. But Rob told me about Juan, and I met Juan. I didn't know Juan used to listen to my videos.
All the time.
And we were at the cigar shop. Yeah. And Rob said, hey, I got a friend that listens to you. I'd love to meet you. I said, of course, I always meet people. And we smoked a cigar, obviously cigars. But we got our cigars. I got, well, put it this way. I'm taping this at, I don't know, it's 12 o'clock somewhere, isn't it? Hey, Rob, you want to put the on-air sign up there for me?
Yeah.
It just looks cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I don't know. It looks fucking cool. It doesn't mean anything. But I'll be doing this today. And I thought I'd get a bourbon. He's got a scotch. He brought me a great. So what kind of cigar is this?
Leaf by Oscar.
Leaf. Where did you get him?
At the cigar shop downtown.
Yeah, I mean, I tried different cigars. You know, that's what I do. But it's, you know, not fucking. You know, I never seen something like that leafed.
Yeah.
I just bought. Matter of fact, I just bought two boxes, and they'll be here today. I get them. I'll give you a guy's number, and I get. Boxes or Oliva Series G, the prop box press.
Yeah.
You know those cigars?
Yeah.
Love those fucking cigars. I'm getting those for like a $1.45, a box of 25.
That's good price.
That's a good price. They're usually, I think, $1.80. And I got a guy from South Florida, so he brings them up for all of us guys. And I just bought a couple of boxes, and I love those cigars. Normally, I smoke cheap cigars. I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Listen. We used to smoke Denables in prison.
Yeah.
You know what a Denable is?
No.
You know those Clint Eastwood shit? You know, like those in fucking good,
ones.
Bad.
Yeah.
You know, he spits, you know, those fucking little things.
Yeah.
Called Denables. They had them in prison when we could smoke. But let's get right to you. How's that?
Okay, let's
go. Okay, you went to Iraq at what age?
Just 23. I was young.
Yeah. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Philly, South Philadelphia.
Northern boy, that's why we click.
Yeah, South Philly.
So you're from South Philly, and what made you go in the military?
Oh, man. Well, growing up in South Philly, I was a crazy kid. I was crazy. I was rough.
I knew we'd get along for a reason.
Yeah, I was in the streets, batting light school. I was just doing dumb shit. But I had an uncle, my mom's brother. He was from California. He came to visit one. He was LAPD, retired LAPD. And I was just like, wow, look at this guy. You know, he's got it going on. I'm living in Philly in the streets. So I just kind of, he planted the seed that there's always something better. There's always something better out there. Then I met my wife. I was only 14 when I met my wife.
Oh, were you arrested at all at this time?
I was arrested. I was arrested twice.
Okay.
Never convicted, but I was.
Good. For what?
Well, the first time was an assault charge. And the second time, I saw a charge with a gun. When the cop pulled me over, I had a gun in the car.
Yeah,
it was a register. I had the gun, you know, under my name. I had it in the car, but it was a fight. So when they found the gun, they locked me up. Thank God that they threw the charges. They dismissed them. And after I was maybe 20, 21, I was like, fuck this. I have to do something. And military was the way to go.
Really? So what made you go, like, you just, like, I did the same thing, obviously, when I was 17, I went in, and the streets was wild, I was already in trouble, and all. You probably know a little bit more of my story. I picked the Coast Guard. I had very high ASVAB scores, so I was lucky enough to get that, and I decided to go in the Coast Guard. Why did you decide, and why the Army?
So I guess the Army was the biggest branch. It was always in your face, and my uncle was in the Army.
Okay.
I had a hard time, because like I said, I was in the streets, and I left school. I was seventh grade. That's the highest education I got.
Wow.
Seventh grade, I left.
You're an intelligent guy. You speak well.
It was hard. I left at seventh grade. I got my GED.
Good for you.
Yeah. And I had to do something better. I had to do something. I knew the military was the key to get out of Philly, to get out, to get out that neighborhood. And it was hard for me to get into. At the time, they weren't accepting GEDs. So I had to wait. I was calling the recruiter every week. Hey,
see, before, when I went in with nothing either. I was kicked out of school. And I just finished 10th grade or 11th grade, I think it was. And fucking go to the military, man. Yeah. They were going to ship me to a different school. Holy shit. Fuck that. I'm in the Bronx. So fucking, the military was the way to go. You know, I was a little troubled, the law and all that kind of thing. Back then, they wanted you to go in the military.
Yeah.
Today, they won't even accept a dude with a DUI.
It's
bullshit.
It's tough, yeah.
Yeah, they're not out of work. So you go in at 23. So you just, up till 23, you're doing nothing. Fucking working crazy jobs, construct, whatever, right?
Yeah, I was actually working for a bunch of talents where I met a bunch of the guys.
What were you doing?
I was working at a pizza shop. And we're talking about a pizza shop. And they said it was a pizza shop, but it wasn't a pizza shop.
Of course not.
The cash register was on a crate. You know, the oven barely worked, but, it was what it was.
You know, I owned a pizzeria and burnt one down.
If
people know my story, I had a pizzeria. I burned it down because I was doing too many hot diamonds. Mm-hmm. I had a good pizzeria in South Florida. And fucking end up burning the whole plaza down. It's in my book. It's a crazy fucking story. And, we did a lot of hot shit at them. They were really like, it was our spot to do shit, wash money, do everything we can. So you're working there just in the place, around the wise guys.
Around all of them, yep. Like I said.
Running errands, going here.
A lot of these guys, when they had to get, Philly, if you've been to Philly, it's.
Do I know Philly?
You got a neighborhood, it's all Italians, a block over, it's all Puerto Ricans, another block's all blacks.
Polish.
Then you got
Kensington, which is fucked up. You know, that's north. Yeah.
What they call it? They say Philly's the city of neighborhoods, right?
Yeah.
So every time the wise guys had to do a pickup in a black neighborhood, a Puerto Rican neighborhood, they used to call me John Rodriguez. Hey, Johnny, I need you to do something for me. I used to go do pickups.
¿Tú hablas español?
Yeah, hablo español.
Yeah, mucho años prisión, 11 años prisión, habla todo el día.
Tú aprendes.
Aprendiendo todo el día.
Yeah, tú aprendes rápido.
Sí.
Yeah.
Entiendes más, tú.
Yeah.
But, so you spoke, I learned it pretty like this. Just told him I learned it in prison. So you went out and you did say, kid, Johnny. See, they called me kid.
Kid, yeah.
Hey, kid, come here. Hey, kid. And, so they send you on an errand because you spoke Spanish, even if it's to go with someone.
Yeah.
Right?
I did a lot of pickups for them guys, yeah.
And now you're at what age? You said fuck school. You quit school yourself.
Yeah.
Now, did you have parents that were sound?
Dysfunctional. No? My father's, to this day, my dad, I hate to say it, but he's a drug addict.
That's okay.
My mom.
Hopefully he changes and comes to grips with life.
Yeah.
I mean, I always believe that can happen. But I also tell people, don't follow. You don't have to fucking follow that and be like that. And they go, well, it's blood. I says, if your fucking brother jumps off the bridge, you're jumping with him?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So you don't have to follow stupidity no matter where it is and no matter who it is. In fact, don't break the cycle.
Yeah.
Which obviously you did.
Yeah. No, it was very dysfunctional. Very dysfunctional.
That's so nobody gave a shit if you quit.
They didn't care. I was living with I met my wife when I was 14.
Right, and you're still with your wife?
I'm still with my wife.
Good for you, man. How many years?
30 years.
30 years. Yep. Both of my marriages don't make 30 years. You know how I made 14 years married? I went to prison for 12 of them. That's the truth.
Yep.
It's fucking crazy, right? Yep. We're still great friends. I have great friends with my
ex. That's good.
Yeah. So you Continue.
I met my wife, 14. We're living together at 14. Normal. It's not normal, but to me it was normal.
What do you mean you're living together?
Yeah.
You don't get an apartment.
No, yeah.
Like, where do you live? You're 14. You can't fucking rent an apartment. When I was 14, we were building forts on the highway. You know?
Yeah, now I'm living with my girl. We're at my mom's house.
Okay, you're
my
right.
We're at my mom's. My dad's running the streets. My mom, she had a lot of issues mentally.
And I am assuming your wife's family had issues to let her come with
my
you.
My wife, yeah, she was 18, so...
Oh, she's older than you.
Yeah, she was 18. That's right, yeah.
She's a cougar.
Yeah.
So when she listens to this,
And my wife's Cambodian.
Okay.
So these people, they wanted her to marry, prearranged marriage and all that shit. When she met me, 14-year-old kid from Philly, I was a thug. They're like, this guy, if you stay with this guy, we're going to disown you. We're going to disown you. It was so bad that they wanted to cut her hair bald. So she wouldn't ever leave the house. It was fucked up. So anyway, she ends.
Runs away.
Yeah. Hey, run away. Come live with me. I was young and hey, shit, come live with me. It'll be okay. It'll be great. So she said,
not a clue of fucking life.
Nothing. She said, okay. Yeah. Been together ever since. But that woman saved my life, though. That woman, good woman. She doesn't drink. She doesn't smoke. She was the one that kept me balanced. I was wild.
Well, you have to have one in the family. That's normal.
Yeah.
When I, not you.
No.
We got to have one in the family.
Yeah. Thank goodness for her.
Good for her. And I want to give her a shout out. They always say there's a good woman behind every man.
Yeah.
I don't know where they are, but no, only kidding. They say that. And that's cool. Something grounded you.
Yeah. You know? She's a nurse now. She's a nurse at the hospital here, at local hospital.
Oh, wow. Probably seen me in there. I've been in that fucking place so much.
She probably has.
Yeah. I was just there with the stupid bite.
Yeah.
But, so, okay, now you meet her, you're living at your mom's house, you're 15 years old, and you're living in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Are you working?
That's when I started working in the pizza shops.
15?
15, yeah.
What about her? Now she's 18.
She wasn't working. She wasn't working
at the time. What the fuck is she doing?
Nah, she's just at the house. I was a weird guy, though. I didn't even want her to leave the house. My neighbor was so fucked up. I told her, stay in the house. I go to work.
Were you a control freak?
I was. Okay. I was at a young age. You're honest. And
this is going to be a great interview.
A dysfunctional family, especially a Puerto Rican family.
Oh, yeah.
They're very
much. Boricua.
I was, hey, you got to be the man, this and that. So it was a little crazy, but she always kept me balanced. And I was sick of the neighbor. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew this life that I'm living needs to change. It needs to get better.
There's nowhere to go, is what you really knew.
Yeah, it needed to get better. Either I'm going to die in the streets selling drugs, or I'm going to join the military and do something. I was hopeful.
I don't know. I know my listeners might notice. My nephew, my brother's son, was killed in Philly. 24 years old, shot right in the head in the middle of the street. And I just saw him after he saw me. I was getting convicted again in Philly in South 6th and Market. And he comes to my trial, and I lean over after the trial, and I said, Davey, I'm very close to my nephew. I said, get out of the game. Look at your father and I mean, just get the fuck out. I mean, when I get out, I'll take care of things. Mm-hmm. He knew, because I was a big shot, so he knew that. And a month later, we get the word that he's shot twice in their fucking head in the middle of the fucking street over some drug thing or whatever it was. And he was on life support. They wouldn't even let my brother go to the hospital to pull the plug. Fucking prison. But that's obviously here nor there. So here you are at 20 now, too. You're working, just making it, making money. What are you doing with your money? Anything or just blowing it?
I was just blowing it.
Partying?
I was blowing it. Yeah, I had no concept about nothing. That's it. My life was just a party. You make money, you spend it, you live your life how you want to live it. You know, I'm in the streets. Even though I worked and I was a family, I was always a family man. But I was always in the streets, and doing a lot of dumb shit. The last time I got arrested, it's been a long time, about 21 or so. That's when I got arrested. There was a big fight with the Irish, the Puerto Ricans down the street, went down, we got into a big fight. The cops ended up pulling me over. I had a gun in the car. So locked me up, and here I went. Thank goodness they dropped the charges. I think they dropped the charges because the way Philly is, everyone's dysfunctional. This fucking kid was 17. He was in a bar. That's where we got into the fight, into this Irish bar in South Philly. And I think the bar on its own, look, you can't go to court. You're in my bar. 17 years old, that's just going to bring the heat. So he never went to court till he dropped the charges. So I was grateful for that. And after that, I'm like, okay, this is it. I'm done. I had a kid at the time now. She was maybe one.
Puerto Rican's a bazillion kids.
Yeah, yeah, I got four kids. I was like, I'm done. That's when I started, you know, talking to the Army guy. I said, hey, can you get me in? He said, look, man, right now we're not accepting GEDs, but, you know, waivers might come in. Just keep
going. What year is this?
This is 98. Well, like, I started in 97 trying to come in.
Wow, because it's amazing. I went in 79 and they fucking took anybody.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, anybody. It was right after Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, Vietnam ended in 76 and 70, technically 76. This war stopped. It was 75, but 76. And so 3 years after, you know, now there was no draft. Mm-hmm. We had to sign up for a draft, but they weren't drafting. And then, but they wanted you. If you wanted in, we'll take you.
Yeah.
So, but now I know how it is now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's what 90. Kosovo, I know that happened. I think that's what changed it. That Bosnia, Kosovo.
Sure.
They started needing troops, so they started getting a little lenient. So, okay, hey, you got a GED. If you score a certain score on the ASVAB, we'll bring you in. So I got lucky. The guy, I kept calling him every week. Hey, you got an opening, you got an opening. One day he said, hey, you know what? We got an opening. Not only do we have an opening, pack your shit up. You got to leave next week.
That's now, you got a kid at home.
I got a kid at home.
What is, and your wife's older than you.
Yeah.
And what does she say?
My wife just, I think my wife was welcome. It was a.
Good for her.
Yeah. She was like, okay, here we go. It's going to happen. She knew it was going to be life changing.
Now, she's home.
She's home.
She's not working?
Now, at the time, she wasn't working. She was just, you know.
Wow, you were hustling good to make money.
I was hustling.
Diapers and all that shit.
I've been working since I was 15, just until when I retired. And now I'm not doing shit. I did enough work. I'm relaxing now.
Well, listen, you can't. We'll get into that in a minute, but go ahead. So you go to the military.
I go to the military.
Where did you go to basic training?
Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. I was a combat engineer.
Okay.
And that's when, it's funny because that's when, it's great because my life changed, but now things are starting to catch up to me. Now, being in seventh grade, my education was limited. So when I went into the military, I was always a hard worker, so people appreciated that. So they wanted me, hey, we want Private Rodriguez. Hey, come here. Come work with us here. But it started catching up to me because now I couldn't articulate things. I couldn't write well. I couldn't, you know, they'll say something. I had to, like, tell my buddy, what the fuck? I don't know what you're talking about. So I had to learn quick. If you're going to be successful in the military, you have to learn quick, adapt, and, you know, if not, you're going to wash out.
Follow orders.
Yeah, you're going to wash out. So I quickly, I almost self-education. I had to catch up from seventh grade to, you know, college level. I had to catch up. So I'm hitting the books. I'm looking at how to write properly.
Now, where were you stationed? Your first place?
My first duty station was in Germany.
So you went out of boot camp to Germany?
To Germany, yes. That was...
But now Germany, where Ramstein?
Near Ramstein in Baumholder.
Right.
The Rock, they called it. Okay. Near Baumholder, Germany.
And now nothing's going on in the world really at this time.
Just Kosovo and Bosnia. That was happening, yeah.
Right. Now, you didn't go there.
I did. When I got to Germany, I was a young private to say, hey, by the way, this battalion is deploying to Kosovo in about 8 months. So I'm like, okay. That's my first deployment. I didn't know shit. My wife barely, she was in Philly, finished boot camp. Went home for a week or so, gave her a kiss goodbye, went to Germany. Now I got to get my wife here. We're in the middle of getting the process of deploying. A little difficult, you know, but finally she came to Germany and I deployed. So she had to go back to Philly. She didn't drive at the time. She was in Germany. So she went back to Philly and I ended up deploying.
So you went from Germany to Kosovo for how long?
Kosovo for 6 months in Camp Bastille.
Okay, now that's a war zone.
It was a war zone at the time. Yeah, they had landmines everywhere. We still picking up pits with dead bodies. You know, it was very dysfunctional. That country was trying to rebuild.
Is that when the what do they call it? The IEDs came in about?
No. The IEDs were
more. Oh, they were back in 92 and stuff. Yeah.
Kosovo was more. The war was basically over. But they still had a lot of residue, a lot of, like I said, the landmines. So other than Cambodia, because I know Cambodia had a lot of landmines from the war. Kosovo was probably the second place that had the most landmines there.
So when you got there, there wasn't much fighting left.
No, there wasn't much fighting. You still had to watch yourself, you know, but yeah, it wasn't much fighting. Yeah, now we had to just try to help them rebuild.
Again, here we fucking go. Yeah. Try to help them rebuild. We were talking before the show, Juan and I, about nation building, and that never works, fucking nation building. And so, you know where it is over there. And my mailman popped in. This is the podcast. We got fucking everybody popping this fucking place, right? A man in Garfield's here. He comes. He picks up our books and whatever else we got. I think there's a letter in there, buddy.
Right here?
No, in the box.
What's this one?
No, that's some. I gotta do shit. So we're sitting there, and there's just a letter there. That's it, I think. You got him, my man. Hey, get a soda. What are you doing? My mailman, hey.
All that stuff, man.
He's actually a friend of mine. He's a friend of mine, too, so. Get a tea. Go ahead.
That's what I love about this community.
With the ginger ale, you
know? Man. No, I need that for my drink.
Dude, no ginger ale, man.
Yell at Teresa. Nice soda. Take a soda. All right, my man. Take care.
Hey.
But I love that guy. He's a great guy. Right from the community.
Yeah.
It was up over in Lockmore area. Great dude. You know, great dude.
Yeah.
So anyway, you go to Kosovo. You just do your time. Now you're 6 months in Kosovo.
Yeah.
Your wife goes home. She doesn't stay at the apartment or whatever.
In Germany. Yeah.
So she goes back to Philly. Mm-hmm. To who?
To my mom's.
Okay,
the dysfunction, still dysfunction, still fucked up. But
it's a spot. It's a roof.
It's what we knew.
Right? And it's a roof.
Yeah, it's what we knew. Now thinking now, I could never go back to, I can't. My life is so different from, you know, they're still stuck in that time loop.
Well, you know, we're going to get into this in this show because I think it's important how you broke a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're really a winner in that regard. I talk to young people. I tell them, listen, it comes a time in your life. I don't give a fuck. Your mom's in jail. Your dad's in jail. Your mom's over. Whatever the fuck it is. At a certain time, you know right from wrong, you got to start making the right choices.
Yep.
Whether it's 15, 16, whatever it is, they have to make the right choices. Now, I'm not saying it's easy, because it's not. They should get a lot of help, and they should get a lot of help chances, whatever it takes. But they have to start making the right choices. But they need to break that cycle of, because it's so easy to get into that alcohol, drugs, do this, this is it. And you listen, we're all there.
Yeah.
And you broke it. So, I mean, I give you a lot of kudos, man. And obviously, you're a nice guy. You got a great family of 4 kids. And, you know, they do. I love it. They're home.
Yeah.
I tell all kids, stay fucking home. Let your parents pay the rent.
Yeah.
No, I don't say that. But the... You know.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I love having him home because I was gone so much. Being in the military, not only with the deployment, but all the field training. You're gone a month. You're back 3 months at the house. You're gone another month. You're always gone. You're always training. You're always getting ready for war. So I spent there's a lot of years I didn't see my family.
Oh, I knew that. I was in prison since my daughter was 15 months old. Oh. I got out. She was 13.
Yeah.
Never saw her. My son was 6, just turned 7. I got out and he was 18.
Yep.
So I feel you, and that's a big, big thing now why I don't ever want to fuck up. I have grandkids.
Yeah.
And I have 2 grandkids, and I don't want to fucking lose them in any fucking way. Everybody else go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I ain't losing them. So you go home. Now you're in the military.
Yeah, I'm in the military.
And you go from Kosovo to where?
From Kosovo, then we went back to Germany. My wife came back. And things were normal. Now, this is back in 90.
Now, this is back and forth. Wow.
Yeah, it is back and forth. Now, we're talking about 99, 2000. Things were kind of normal until 90.
You're still only either a private or an E4.
I was an E3, just about to be E4.
Right, E3.
Yeah, then 9/11 hits.
Oh, shit.
9/11 hits. I was in Germany. 9/11 hits.
What was it like there? Tell me.
It changed. We're watching it on TV when it happened. You know, we're all watching it like, holy shit, look at this, you know. My platoon sergeant, you know, great guy to this day. I love that guy. But my platoon sergeant said, "Look, this is a game changer. We're gonna go to war." I'm a young soldier. I'm like, "Oh shit!" And we just got back from Kosovo. He said, "No, that's this is game changing. What's going on right now?" and you'll see. And he was right. It changed the game.
Well, see, I remember the first Gulf War very well, 92.
Yeah.
When Bush, the first Bush, kicked fucking Iraq out of Kuwait, you know, with the oil and all that. And, boy, it showed a lot about the military, number one, how good they are.
Yeah.
Our military.
I think it was 100 hours they took it over.
It just the advancements in technology that we didn't know then. Could you imagine today? Mm-hmm. Holy shit, the shit we don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we knew. I mean, obviously a lot of people suspected afterwards somebody's going to pay for this shit.
Yeah.
And it did, obviously. So now, when do you see your next, where's your next station and when do you see action?
Well, after 9/11, that was September, obviously. A few months later, IPCS, that's what the Army calls, you know, changed duty stations. So from...
You do? Is it a normal rotation?
Well, every couple of years. You
no, know, I know that, but I mean, so it wasn't anything special for a
while. Nothing special, yeah, nothing crazy. So they ended up sending me to California, Fort Irwin, NTC, I-4. And I thought, okay, I'm safe. I'm going to be an I-4 guy. We're training guys to go to combat. That's what NTC does. And I thought I was good. I'm like, oh, well, I won't see combat. Then I'll be safe here. That wasn't the case at all. Things were so bad in Iraq, especially in Sadr City around 2004, 2005. They ended up deploying us. So my little company out of Fort Irwin, the 58th in, engineers, they deployed us to Iraq.
God. So thank God they take you. And they deploy you to where?
To Iraq, yeah.
Now, this is before fucking the real big shit hits yet.
Yeah, it was really bad during that time. You know, everybody could tell you, especially in Sadr City. Sadr City and Fallujah were hot at the time.
Oh, that Fallujah was big. I remember that. Okay.
And I'm like, holy, okay, here we go. I was kind of excited, though, not to lie. If you're anyone that's in the military, you don't deploy to combat, you just... It'll bother you. So I was kind of excited. Okay, this is my job. This is what I'm trained to do. I'm going to go to combat. I'm going to go to Iraq. At least I could say I was a combat vet. But that shit,
get the combat badge.
You got the combat patch, all that, yeah. So I thought, though, until you get there, you're actually in the shit.
Go ahead. So now you're where in Iraq? So you go now, you're in a division that you're going to go to war.
Yeah.
Literally going to fucking war.
We're going to war. Yeah.
I mean, did they give you a pep talk saying, guys, this is it. This is the real deal. We ain't no drill. We trained for this. I need you guys to listen, follow order, blah, blah, blah.
I'll tell you what. The General Miley, the guy he's the top dog now, General Miley.
Oh, Miley.
Miley, yeah. He was my battalion commander.
I like that guy. Yeah. He's a no-fuck-around
guy.
He
did not. He gave us the pep talk. He said, look, we're in the...
What was he at that time?
He was a battalion commander. I think he was a lieutenant colonel or colonel. Maybe a colonel, Fulbert, at the time. He gave us a pep talk. We were in the Baghdad airport. That's where, you know, everybody's at. And he said, look, you guys, we're going to go from here. We're going to go to Sadr City.
Now, let me give this for the audience to picture it. You're at the airport. How many guys are there? 1,000? 10,000?
Camp Liberty And yeah, that's thousands. That's the main place.
What I meant is where General Miley gave you this pep talk.
Oh, it was just in a motor pool. We're in a motor pool.
Oh,
we're
fuck. So he walked around and went to all divisions and gave pep talks?
No, just his battalion. We're part of his battalion. And he just, hey, we're all...
There's not many people there?
No, a couple hundred people.
Wow.
So we left in stages, so maybe 100 people.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And he comes up, you know...
And he says, look, guys... We're going to Sadr. I didn't know what the hell Sadr City was. And I found out real quick what Sadr City was. He told us, look, we're going to go to Sadr City. It's the hottest place in Iraq right now. So we're going to go there. And if we have to, we're going to plant our guy down. And we're going to fight to the death. So I knew once he said that, this is serious.
This is fucking real. Serious. We ain't playing around. It's
and
no
I tell
drill.
You, it wasn't. He was not lying. We got in our convoys. We left Camp Liberty, the airport.
How many in your convoy?
20-something people. We even had Blackhawks. We went in deep. We had to show Sadr City. We're
here for fucking real.
Yeah, they were having a lot of issues.
Now, are you going into, like, urban combat?
Yeah.
This is not like a field like in fucking Kuwait. We just wipe them fucking out, drop bombs from fucking planes. You're into a city.
Imagine going to Manhattan There's so many buildings. You don't know where the enemy's at. It was
shooting at you, snipers, this shit.
Yeah, and then people are still trying to live their lives. You got traffic. You got people shopping still. It was crazy. I'm like, it's a world, but we're in combat.
Wow, fucking wild, right?
A little crazy, yeah. But I tell you, when he told us that, and we got in our convoy, and we left, and we started driving, and once we crossed the line into Sadr City, not even 2 minutes, we were engaged. We were in a firefight for maybe 13 hours.
Whoa. You're in a convoy of 20 vehicles.
20-some vehicles.
And, you know, you got maybe 100, 200 men or whatever the fuck it is. So you're driving. Somebody gives the order, getting, you know, ready. And you fucking jump out and you're fucking facing shit. And you're in a firefight.
Now, you know, when you do your convoys, you split them up. Right? You 10 vehicles here. You're going to go here. You know,
You already had a plan.
We're making our way to the city.
Knew what was going on. Yeah. Right, okay.
But as soon as we crossed the line in Sadr City, it was a firefight. And I didn't know what this.
I'm like, never did this.
Never did this. Now I got bullets literally bouncing off. I was in a 113.
What is that?
It's a small little anti-personnel tank.
Okay.
And it carries about 12 troops.
Okay. Are you hearing bullets hit the thing?
No, I'm hearing bullets literally hitting. I had a little chicken shield in front of my 50 cal. They call it a little chicken shield, a little shield. Bullets were hitting my shield. And I'm like, I'm going to die. They're going to kill me. But that's how it was all night.
Your fucking training kicked in and you're just fighting back.
Fighting. That 50 cal is just going off. You hear that boom, 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 boom. All night.
And they're shooting at you?
They're shooting at us. Small arms, RPGs. And they'll refit, they'll come back out, and we're just refitting. We run out of ammo, we'll run back into a base, get ammo, come back out. And it was like that all night. It was crazy.
You're in a 13-hour firefight.
Yeah.
You lose anybody?
Not that day. Not that day.
That is a fucking testament to the fucking armor and the planning and this logistics of not losing a man in a 13-hour. Yeah. I mean, bullets are flying, right?
Oh, yeah. It was crazy.
Okay, so how does the firefight end?
It just ended, just like that. I think either they ran out of bullets or we just said, hey, fucker, we're going back in. It just ended. As quick as it started, that's how it ended.
Wow, now you're just a fucking soldier following orders.
Yeah.
Let's go, move out, and all that shit, right?
It was funny, I was just a newly promoted sergeant at the time.
Okay.
So I got my team, and I'm supposed to get these orders. Hey, no.
Contact right,
contact left, you know. And I was overwhelmed. And good thing we had good leaders. I had guys there that were actually in from the Black Hawk down, you know, that incident.
You know, that's a good friend of mine.
Okay. Yeah.
Danny McKnight. Danny McKnight was the colonel who went in to get the guys in the Black Hawk down. Yeah. He's in the movie and everything. Yeah. The Streets of Mogadishu is the book.
Yeah.
He wrote it.
Second brigade out of Fort Drum, them guys. So I was with them guys.
Yeah,
out of
those
Fort
guys
Drum.
Knew battle, man.
They were fucking seasoned
warriors, man.
I tell you what, these guys are badass, but they're at Fort Drum, cold as hell. When they got to Iraq, it was so hot, them guys were dropping like flies. We had to get medevacs because you have to before you go into Iraq, you have to go to Kuwait for about a month. You do your training, you do some blind fire. Yeah, you have to. Acclimate to the conditions. These guys were dropping. They have medevacs coming in. These guys were dropping. The weather was fucking these guys up more than anything.
Really?
Yeah, they were hurting.
Now here you are. You're a young sergeant. You fucking just go through your first firefighter. You get in. Is there a base that's secure? You can get a good night's sleep, use the bathroom, jack off, do whatever
We were. It's a little camp in Sadr. They called it Camp Cuervo. Camp Cuervo. I hope some of these guys that were there, it's going to bring back some memories. Now, Camp Cuervo, little hole in the wall base that we took over. That's where we went. We got chow. After it was all, we all ate. No one said a word. Everyone was quiet. We were all trying to process this.
Right. You don't know if you hit anybody, number one. It's just shooting fucking wildly,
and
really.
And to be honest, you don't even see these fucking guys. They're shooting at you in the fog of war, they call it, right? The fog of war, everything's slow motion. You're shooting. You don't really know what you're shooting at. You see a kind of little flash of lights. Yeah,
shoot at it.
Yeah, that's it.
And you're on the 50?
I was on a 50 cal, yeah.
We had a 60 on my fucking boat.
Yeah.
Good old fucking little 60. I couldn't fucking run through my fucking wall. fucking. But anyway, so now you're in combat. What happens? Is it a daily thing? Do you go out on patrol? How do you start clearing a city of fucking, you know, you don't know who's friend or foe.
Yeah.
You know, this is what people get fucked up in the head. And I know it because, you know, we both talked beforehand. Juan and I both were PTSD with the military, and it's real. So anybody's facing PTSD out there, please get help. It's real, and our help has helped us, and we talk about that. Just process things, it, you know, helps you realize you're not a fucking evil person or you're not stupid or whatever you want to call it. So you fucking just a shooting wildly, doing things. How long do you do that?
We did that for a few months. It was constant fighting for a few months.
And when you say constant fighting, are you going out on patrols?
We're going out on patrols every day.
And people shoot at you?
Every day. People were shooting at us every day for months.
And there's
months.
People in the streets. There's regular people in the streets.
It's so bad. It was so bad that when we were driving on convoys, the enemy didn't care that there was 1,000 cars on the road. They didn't care. They saw an opportunity. Soldiers come and go and try to kill them. So these guys are blowing themselves up, hitting us with IDs, and they're killing. They're not really. They killed soldiers. You know, it's terrible, but they're killing themselves. They're killing their own people. For every one soldier they killed with an ID, they're killing 30 other Iraqi civilians. They didn't care. They just wanted to kill us. And that was
at all costs. It didn't mean shit.
At all costs, they didn't care. You know, and that's.
Now, are you doing patrols?
We're doing patrols.
Are you doing patrols?
I was doing patrols, yeah.
And you're a sergeant.
Yeah.
You're supposed to know your shit.
Yeah, we're doing patrols. And yeah, it's a learning curve. You have to learn quick.
Absolutely. You have to learn real quick. Absolutely. Obviously, you're a smart guy. Yeah. So now you go out, you do your patrols, you do stuff. You make it, like, for 3 months, let's say, whatever. Are you there for 3 months?
I was there. We were there for a year.
So you're in this little fucking base for a year.
We were there for a year. For the first 6 months, I was in Sadr City. And after we actually kind of took control, it calmed down, and then they moved.
But it never really calmed down.
No, it never calmed down.
You never, ever relaxed.
No, no.
Because somebody's trying to kill you.
No, yeah, yeah. No,
it calmed, no reason except you got a green uniform on.
Yeah. It calmed down enough that they could say, okay, look, we got to, because, you know, divisions keep coming in. They rotate people in and out. It was good enough that now that the prison, that big prison, the Abu Ghraib prison.
I wrote about it.
Yeah, that prison got attacked. So they said, you guys now got to go to the prison.
Wrote about that. You know, that was some fucked up shit. Yeah. I compared Atlanta prison I was in, or Edgefield, to Abu Ghraib. It's a big article out on the internet. And because we had worse conditions in the prison I was in. Fucking Abu Ghraib was a torture chamber.
That's what, remember them soldiers were, sure, they got caught doing that shit with the prisoners?
With the electric shit.
That's what set it off.
All my young people out there, listen to this. Abu Ghraib, it's A-B-U, and then G-H-R-A-I-B or I-A-B, Ghraib. Abu Ghraib. It was a prison in Iraq that the American soldiers were torturing Iraqi prisoners. And they got caught on film and everything. It was a big fucking scandal. And I wrote an article saying how American prisons are as fucking worse than going on with Abu Ghraib. Matter of fact, I said, where do you think they get the guards in American prisons? From fucking either military, someone who's fucking doing that in Abu Ghraib, and they think they could come here and do that. But, so that's sad. I mean, that's just bad people.
Yeah.
I never judge people. People who know me, I was abused by a priest at a young age. And I don't judge all priests. They're scumbags that do that. They're fucking people that are scumbags. They're fucking should be fucking hung by their fucking yardarms.
Yeah.
But I can't denigrate a whole profession or people because they're not all bad.
No, that's the problem. These guys that did that at that prison, it was just
a handful.
A squad of soldiers, maybe, you know, that did, and they just ruined it for everybody. And it was a national incident.
Internationally, yeah, you're fucking kidding me.
Yeah, that because of that incident, they attacked the prison, and that's why they called us in there. Okay, hey, you guys go there. We have to protect the prison. We put some wire around the prison.
Oh, so you end up putting concentrator wire all over the place.
That's what we do as engineers. IEDs or landmines and wires, putting obstacles up. So we put an obstacle because 2 days before they try to overrun the prison. A good thing that, you know, we were able to hold them back, and they say, okay, we need to reinforce the prison.
We need people, I got it. Okay, yeah. So you do that, they do that. Now you're, do the prison, some more combat? Anybody trying to attack you?
while we're putting wire, we're getting attacked. You know, as a matter of fact, when I got to, we got to the, we and literally we went from Cedar City, maybe a 12, 13 hour shift. Get back, we ate chow, I said, are you going to the prison? No sleep, man. We went to the prison, and when we got there, I looked over and I see this van full of bullet holes. Just maybe 3 hours before the van try to go through the gate, and they just full of bullet holes.
Yeah, fucking peppered it.
I'm looking, I'm like, okay, this is going to be that type of mission. Exhausted, but we did our job, man. We always do our job. It doesn't matter. We put the wire up and...
Okay, so you do that. You have battles every day. Yeah. I mean, listen to me. You had a lot of bullets flying. That's for sure. So you go from there. You're in Cedar City for a year.
Less than a year. About 6 months. We're in Cedar City, yeah.
But that... And then...
It's all in the same vicinity, right?
Okay, yeah. That's what I meant. That whole area. And then where do you go from there?
From there, we went to the prison.
That's what I meant. So in that whole area, you're there for a year?
Yeah. I was there for a year.
After the year, what happens?
Well, after that, we rough fight. At the time, I thought I was done. I said, I'm done. I can't. And I got hit with an IED. During that time, I got hit with an IED. We got blown up.
So you're a Purple Heart?
And you're not. That's another story. That's General Miley. He denied my Purple Heart at the time.
You were hit with a fucking IED.
There was guys that were losing limbs. They were getting shot. They were, you know, and I got hit with an IED. It broke my back, but I wasn't bleeding. Even though I had my eardrums ruptured, I had shit coming out of my ears. He denied my Purple Heart.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, and I got a TBI.
What did he say fucking happened?
He just
fucking fall. Now that fucking takes a lot of shit from that guy. Yeah. I don't like that he did that.
I got scar tissue.
I don't know
if brain.
He did it either. You know that. He denied it.
It was the one that it all goes through him. He has to prove or deny.
But there's people who do this shit and then they come to him. And could you appeal that?
I could. Yeah, I can get one now. Yeah, because now the rules change for TBI and stuff like that. You can get it.
You should get it. Yeah. Just get it, man. Yeah. Get it, bro. If you need help, I'll help you. We'll push it. We got it somehow. Get it.
Yeah, but at the time, you know, I understood we were losing, I would say, about 100 soldiers a month. We're losing a lot of guys. A lot of guys were getting killed.
People not coming home.
People not coming. A lot of friends. I lost a lot of friends. Like I said, that APC, that 113 that I was in, it carries about 12 troops. So I was the track commander, and I had my driver, and the guys from the 2nd Brigade, or we had guys from Kansas with us as well. And them guys never made it.
They all died.
All died. And to this day, there was their squad leader, Sergeant Jordan, Staff Sergeant Jordan, and I hope he's hearing, you know, to this day, I love that guy. But he lost his whole squad, and the last person to die was actually on the overpass. So they had these overpasses that crossed the highways. We're going, you know, driving underneath, someone put an IED on the overpass, blew up and killed this last soldier. And he held him, the guy was from South Philly, from Oregon. He was Oregon Street. He held him in his arms, and he passed away in his arms. That was the last soldier out of the whole squad that he lost. And
so he lost his whole fucking squad.
His whole squad. He was the last
you know,
man standing.
People don't know about this because you don't hear about Kosovo. You don't hear about Iraq in the beginning. Like you heard about Fallujah. You heard about certain things. But you don't hear about these little battles going on in these little fucking cities where we're losing 100 guys a month, let's call it, like you said. Think about that. That's 1,200 guys that are not coming home in some foreign land that we don't fucking even believe to be there, personally. But that's a whole other story on the fucking, you know, mass eruption, all that bullshit we'll get into later. And here you are fucking just following orders.
Yeah.
Doing what you're supposed to. That is why I respect our military, not only as a military guy. And I respect them because... Knowing that you are just saying to this world, I will do whatever the guy who I work for says to do to protect my country's what, and you have no, forget the political, you have no idea what the real, none of us do, about the real deep shit about the military, you know, is the industrial complex and who's getting paid and why we're at war and all this, but people's dies, families are affected. And, you know, you're trying to fight, we talked earlier, an ideological war. Like, you're trying to, you know, bring stability into a region that doesn't want fucking stability. Yeah. But, so you saw your death. You know, this so much reminds me of Mine was different. I saw lots of dead bodies, picked them up. Mm-hmm. It's my book and all everything. And I mean, watch people sift through Stokes litters. You know what a Stokes litter is, of course. Stokes litter is where you carry a person, and it's got wire mesh. And the reason you have them on ships and boats is you lower the Stokes litter in the water, and you bring the body into the Stokes litter, and then you lift it's called the Stokes litter. Well, it has chicken wire. The body's been in the water so long, when we pick it up, the fucking body is dripping through a fucking, and you're looking like, I remember grabbing a guy's arm, and his fucking, the whole fucking thing to the bone come fucking in my hand. It's like, I'm trying to dunk my hand in the water. It's just, and you think about it, it starts fucking with your head. There's no question about it, man. I feel for you, man. But we all, again, get through things because we're strong. We have to do it for a lot of different reasons, people and everybody else. But I want people out there, the people that listen to this show, the young people that listen to this show, there's guys that, you're 45? 45. Looks fucking young. I don't like them already. Fucking, I'm the old fucking man here. And you look great. I mean.
Thank you.
But I know what goes on in your head.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's normal. And I think you hope you know that. And they're all good people. Like your buddy Rob and me. Anybody you can always call and say, let's go for a beer. Let's go for a fucking cigar. Yeah. And it has nothing to do. You might not say a word. But it's just being around somebody you're comfortable with. You can say something. You don't worry about what you say. I remember I go to see friends of mine. And Rob knows them all, and you'll get to know them. I'll bring in a couple of lunches and stuff. And what people don't know, it's not about just rehashing something. It's about having that camaraderie with somebody that's not going to judge you, that's not going to look differently on you. It's not going to do, and you know what I mean? Yeah. That's what's so important about you, and you have that, whether it's Rob or people around me, your family, whoever you
can. That's so true. I tell you, I've been in Florida now for about 10 years. When I retired, I came out to Florida. Just now, maybe the 3 years, I would say I'm starting to make friends, because it's so difficult to make friends when they just don't understand.
Yeah.
And then not with civilians, but they want to ask questions that sometimes you don't want to answer. Especially with me, they always ask me the first, what do you do for a living? I'm retired. Oh, how do you, Army? Yep. What did you do? Then so 8 years or 7 years, I had no friends. I was just at the house.
You were processing still.
I was a recluse. I had a bunch of surgeries. You know, I had to go get through that. And
Do we have a lot in common right here. I get it. And you know what I always try to say? And I even asked you beforehand, is there anything off limits or this? And I'm glad there's not, because if there is, then you're still harboring something.
Yeah.
Now, it could be, I don't want to talk about it right now. Yeah. It could be a lot, and I get it. There's days I don't even want to be around people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be around fucking anybody. I'll sit in here and fucking, you know, smoke a cigar and fucking veg out, you know? Yeah. It's just the way it is. And I get that. So, but I'm glad you've got, you know, your shit together and you.
A lot of therapy. I go to the VA, you know, and I take advantage of them programs because I know if I don't, I'm going to die. You're going to die. You might not die, you know, emotionally you're going to be fucked up. You know, you're not going to live a good life. You might as well be dead. So I knew, it took me a couple of years to figure that out. It
took me a lot more. No. I wasn't until I'm 60, so probably 45, your age, where I started, you know, I had a lot of demons, but I have a lot of demons from a lot of things. And until you start combating your own demons, you fucking can't get, you know, you catch yourself snapping at people. You catch yourself fucking, you know, being that recluse that you don't want.
Yeah.
You get up, you know, I mean, I have some weird shit from dreams. Teresa will tell you, she'll say, man, I've seen him jump out of bed fucking wanting to, you know, kill somebody.
I've done it. Yeah. Jump out of bed, you go into prone position, and you wake up like, oh shit.
What the fuck?
Yeah, my wife's looking at me like, she knows. You okay? You good?
You know, the only reason you're married, right? Because you got a foreign woman.
Yeah.
No, really. I mean, they're really great.
Yeah.
I don't mean that to be against anybody. They grew up a different way. So they kind of understand it a little bit.
I tell you, my wife, and it's a kind of segue to this, but my wife came to this country because of Khmer Rouge in Cambodia.
Sure.
So her family, she lost three quarters of her family. They were murdered, you know. Her childhood memories.
Warlords and shit. Yeah. You fucking crazy shit over there.
Yeah, her childhood memories are running through the jungles, escaping the Khmer Rouge, you know, and wanting to get to a base where the Americans were taking, you know, these people, these
refugees. To protect them, sure.
You know, they knew, hey, we find Americans, we're going to be okay. So she's a very simple woman. She lived a life that was real crazy, at, you know, when she was young. So she's simple. She, you know, when she got with me, she didn't want the house on the hill. She just wanted to have a normal life.
Good for her.
So, yeah.
Well, she met the right guy. But so now you do your thing. Now, you were in the military a long time.
Yes, sir.
So you get fucked up with an IED. Mm-hmm. You break your back.
Yeah.
Fucking blood coming out, concussion, major concussion. Yeah. You know what that means and all that. And you fucking, whatever, you repair, and you stay in.
Well, when I got back from Iraq.
So wait, you go from that year, where do you go from there?
I had a break in service. Well, not a break. I got out. When I got back, I got out. I said, I'm an ETS. But I stood in the reserves.
Right.
That's when I flipped over and I became an MP. I reclassed because my back was
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, and I ended up reclassing. But I was out for maybe 6 months. I couldn't do it. I had to get back in.
There's something about the... I try to tell people. I have guys I was in the military with from 1979. We're still buddies to this day.
They're brothers. They're brothers.
We go and meet. We talk, whether it's on the phone or try to get together. If someone's in the area, we go to lunch. And it's amazing. And we very rarely talk about any military.
Yeah.
It's everything about everything else, but we know what we all went through. We all been to this certain spot. We've, you know, did this or that for whatever it is, you know. So now you come out, you go back in the military. Well, you're in the military. You were never really out.
I was never really out. I went to the reserves. And
they didn't activate you as a reserve?
No, because I was only a couple months, and I was already itching, begging. You know, hey, I need to get back
out. Yeah, it's that camaraderie.
I went to the recruiter. I said, I didn't know at the time, but I was dealing with severe PTSD.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think I couldn't deal with it in the civilian world. I had to go back in to something that I knew, something that was structured,
It's like people with prison.
Yeah.
People go back to prison because that's what they know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you get back in and you become an MP.
I become an MP.
Okay, we can fuck with you here now.
I became an MP.
So you become an MP. Do you go to military training, police training?
I did. I had to go to AIT again. They call it advanced training for your MOS. So I went to MP school, finished that. And this is no lie. You can't make this up. I went back in the Army, and I was stationed back in Baumholder across the street.
So you go to Germany again?
I went to Germany again, across the street where I was stationed at the first time, my first duty station. I was literally across the street as an MP.
Oh my God.
That was mind tripping. I was like, this is the Matrix.
Right. You were just here fucking 3 years ago.
Yeah, this is the Matrix. What's going on here? I was right across the street.
Now, are you a sergeant at this time?
I was. I was a staff sergeant at this time. I was an E6.
Right.
And now, when you're a sergeant, I was never an MP before, but you're a sergeant. So you got to know your shit. They assume I've been an MP.
Sure, you got the stripes.
I had no fucking clue how to be a cop. I had no clue how to run things, but now they say, hey, you're here, you're an MP. Not only that, but you're going back to Iraq. You're going back to... I wasn't even there 3 days. So you're going back to Iraq. And not only are you going back to Iraq, you're going back this time for 15 months.
So you're going to Iraq now, 15 months to Fallujah?
No, this was all over the country, actually, this one. This was...
As an MP?
As an MP. I was all over. I was working with the brigade commander.
Now, what is the difference between an MP and an infantryman in Iraq?
In my opinion, some people say it's no difference. In my opinion, there is a difference. We weren't really doing combat patrols. We were dealing more with the Iraqi police. We were trying to train these guys, trying to build this country. So we're doing a lot of training with the Iraqi police. I was with the battalion commander, or the brigade commander at the time.
Now, who? What is that? Like a commander?
He was in charge of all the MPs. He was a Fulbright colonel. He was in charge of all the MPs. So this guy, he had to go all over the country. all over that country. Anywhere where there was MPs,
you would go with him.
I would go with him. I was his PSD, personal security detail. And yeah, we visited. I think I've been to every corner of that country. We went everywhere.
Sure, he had to go there and check his troops and shit.
And to be honest, though, I was so jacked up from the first deployment. I was so fucked up. The second deployment, I didn't want to go. I was petrified. I'm gonna die. I just got back in. My wife, my kids. I thought I was gonna die.
At this time, you got a few kids home.
I have four kids now.
I know. Back then, did you have two?
Well, we deployed the first time. I had two. Then I ended up coming back. We had two more.
Oh, so you have the four kids?
Now I got four kids. Yeah, I got four kids.
God bless your wife.
Yeah, she did this all by herself.
I said that.
Yeah, she did this all by herself.
Good for her.
Yeah, all by herself. And this time, now 15 months I'm deployed. I got to Germany. I didn't see my wife for about 2 years. You know, that's my kids. No, I didn't see them for many years.
But so now you go there and you go around with the colonel.
Yeah.
And you're his detail, you're this. I understand all that. Mm-hmm. And do you see combat? Shoot?
Very rarely.
They don't want
to
put
a couple skirmishes here and there. Yeah, you got the boss with you now.
Yeah,
we're talking about General Petraeus. We're being around these all high profile guys.
Oh, he's having meetings.
Meetings there where General
Petraeus, the biggest people in the country. Yeah.
I was lucky enough to working with this colonel that was able to meet all these guys. And I tell you, it was so...
Was Powell in then or gone?
No, he was
gone. He was Secretary of State, maybe.
Yeah, it was... Petraeus was in charge, and then after that was Ordinaro. He just passed away.
He did. That's the guy who handled the New Orleans thing, too.
Yeah,
man. Also, was it Kelly there?
I don't know.
You know General Kelly?
Yeah, I don't know. That was Petraeus, Ordinaro, then it was General Austin. But it was... You know, I tell you... I didn't want to go, but going back, that was the best therapy to go back to that country.
You faced your demons.
Yeah, a lot of these guys go back to Vietnam, and it helps them, you know. And I think that was the case with me. I went back. It wasn't as bad, and I was able to process a lot of my emotions, a lot of these PTSD feelings. And I still had it. It was still severe.
You always have it. You know that now. Yeah. We both talk about that. So now you go... And how long are you an MP?
I was an MP 8 years or so. Yeah.
So you did, that's where you did the last of your time?
That's it, yeah. That's what I did, yeah.
And you got out after 4 to 16?
Yeah, 14, 15 years. But they were trying to med board me. I was so fucked up, but I was a soldier. I didn't want to get out. You know, I was hurt. I had surgeries on both shoulders. My back was jacked up. And they're like, look, Sergeant, you have to go. You got to go.
Are you retired military?
They've retired.
See, I'm retired.
Yeah, they're retired. Yeah, they're retired.
When you get hurt bad enough, like I was, and you.
Yeah.
You don't just get kicked out. You're retired. Yeah. I have my retired ID to this day. Retired military ID and all that kind of shit. I remember when I was fucking getting retired, I was fucking on a place called Fort Todd, and I ended up getting busted from E6 to fucking E5 because I told a... Lieutenant Commander go fuck himself. Yeah. You know, that was pretty easy for me to do.
I think guys like us, because I got an Article 15 too. Guys like us, we don't like to, especially when I became an MP. I came from a unit we were warriors. We were warriors too. Now to this unit, they're a little bit more, how do you say, politically correct. They were a little bit more office guys, you know. And I was a combat guy. So I was quick to tell these guys, you saw
some shit. You saw action.
I was quick to tell these guys to fuck off.
Right.
I just didn't want to deal with it, you know. And then I had a good doctor. He said, "Look, Sergeant Rod, look, this is the deal. I want to stay in." He said, "Look, if you don't retire, they're gonna kick you out, dude. You can't run. I could barely run without being in pain. I could barely do things. So they're gonna kick you out. Don't be stupid. Retire." Let me med board you. Let me go through the process. I said, okay. No, it is what it is.
Good for you. I mean, obviously it's after that we get our help.
Yeah.
We never get it there.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. We're too fucking straight and go. That's what drove us to be what the leaders we were, and it drove us to be the people we were, because we wouldn't quit. And, you know, you couldn't tell me no. You want to tell me to go through this wall, I'll figure out a fucking way to go through that wall. Yeah. I mean, it's just the way it was. Yeah. You know, I had a crew. We used to work fucking 15, 18 hours on ships, boarding fucking Maru, which is Japanese, or back then, Russian. boats. And this is during the Cold War. And, you know, you fucking... Sleep was when you got it. You didn't. It wasn't like, oh, I'm getting my 8 hours and go to bed tonight at 9. I'll get up at 7 or 6. You fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
You're up at fucking 2 in the morning, dropping boats, getting ready with your gear, doing this shit. You know, and then you're fucking going, the adrenaline fucking throws you through the fucking roof. Then I'm out in the middle of the ocean.
Then you go to the VA, you tell them, look, I can't sleep. I can't sleep anymore.
That's my biggest thing.
Yeah, I can't sleep.
I was telling you earlier, I'm up till 2 every morning, 2:30. And it's just what I do now. All right, now let's get, how are you doing? You know, one, I want to thank you for your service, too.
Thank you.
You know
that. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you. And it's guys like you and us that just move on and raise good kids and try this stuff. Do you ever have problems with your kids?
You know, I do.
How many did you throw through the wall? I remember my son. I give you a quick story. I got out of prison now. This is only 14 years ago because I'm out 2007. So it was less than 14. I'm out very short time. And I'm at a party with all my family. Now you got to remember, I got pictures. I'm jacked. I mean, I'm fucking, benching 375.
I saw a picture of that,
fucking, you didn't want to fuck me. I was a fucking animal. So my nephew, I'm going to bring him on. He remembers it, you know. I love him, too. He's such a good kid. So he's a young kid. He's about 13 years old. And Ryan fucking disrespects my mother, his grandmother. Mm-hmm. I snatched him by his fucking neck, hit him against a wall, like a stanchion, lifted him. His feet were fucking dangling. And the place gets quiet, and I said, you ever talk to my mother like that, I'll fucking kill you. Mm-hmm. I drop him. He runs away. Now, my other nephew, he tells everybody's story. He goes, so he runs away. My sister goes, good, whatever you want to do. She's since passed, but my sister and I close. She says, do whatever, you got the best interest. So my other nephew goes out, he's younger than him, goes out, gets his brother, and he told his brother, goes, Uncle Larry can't do that to me. I got this knife, this pocket knife. My one nephew tells him, if you break that pocket knife out with Uncle Larry, he's going to stick it up your fucking ass. He ain't playing.
Yeah.
And he tells that story. He was a little kid, 13. I was fucked. It's that way, listen, there's certain things that just click. And if it did click bad, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
I caught myself later, and I'm getting better and better as I get older. I tell kids that I ain't fighting you. I'm hitting you with a bat. It's easy.
Yeah.
I was a fucking good fighter. And I can hit like a tank. And if I hit you, you're gone. I mean, I'm...
Lights out.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. They call them heavy hand. Today, I'll take one shot. I'm done. If I miss, it's done. Just beat my fucking head in. But I'm going to hit you with a bat.
Yeah.
You know, these kids today, we can't play with 25-year-old kids anymore. Like you said, you can't run. You
can't do shit. I'm lucky, I guess, because I got all girls. I got all girls.
Well, I don't know if that's lucky or not.
Yeah, that's... But, I was never... I tell my oldest, I tell her all the time, look, when I had you, I was 18. I was a pup. Now, I'm wiser. I'm older. I'm a better dad now, but I wasn't at 25, 26,
Me too.
And I was never there, So I'm trying to be... My kids all live with me. They're all at home because I don't care. I don't care if they're... They're living with... Because I'm trying
Wait
to make up this
stop,
time.
Stop. Boy. You care because you love them.
Well, yeah.
You're
going to
help them because you
want to
help them.
I want them...
You want them to be happy.
I want my kids home. I want to spend as much time with them.
You know you don't want them home. You want them to be happy. They're home because you could help them. You can financially help them. It's not easy for kids today.
It's not.
You're helping them financially. They got a room to play, roof over their head. Yeah. They work or whatever they do and all that, but you want them to find the
right path. I knew how rough it was when I was young, so I'm happy that I can help my kids. And
that's better. We want them. I have a daughter, 25, 26. I had to catch myself trying to direct her life. Who the fuck am I to direct her life?
I have one of my daughters told me that. Like, hey, she's like, look, Dad, I'm in my 20s. I know you mean well. I'm like, you're absolutely right.
She's going to make the mistake and just smile and hope it's not a big enough one that's going to hurt them for the rest of their life. We talk about that with your kid, whatever. Yeah. And And that's just how you have to do it. And see, my son, who's 32, and everybody on the show knows he works for me. He runs my social media. And my son, I'm very close with my son. My son is such a good kid. And he's smart, quick on his feet. He's from Brooklyn. You know, he's a fucking New York guy. I mean, it's tough to beat those guys. They're fucking smart, fast. And what I think about that is it took him a long time to realize, okay, this is what I want. I still want him out of Brooklyn. I wish he'd come move to Florida, help him out more, do what I can more. Things are better, cheaper, different lifestyle. You know, we grew up in the Northeast, so you know what that fucking life is like.
Yeah.
So do I. So, but, excuse me, but you can't, you gotta say, step back, Pop. You know, and I'm very close. I mean, I could hang with my kids. I remember I took my daughter on her 21st birthday to fucking Key West. She drunk me under the fucking table.
I take my girls to the cigar bar with me. We sit down, we smoke cigars.
You know? Really? Yeah. I got to meet them, man. Good for My daughter won't do that, but we went down to Key West. Come on, Dad. You know, we're sitting at a bar. She's drinking me under the fucking table. Another shot. She's 21.
Yeah.
I said, oh, you didn't drink. Nah, of course.
That's where I'm at right now because my kids are old enough to drink. So we can drink together. We can socialize. My kids, they make me a better man.
Oh, you know, it's so funny. I just talked to my daughter the other night at 1 in the morning. She works in a bartender. And she was getting off, whatever. She texts me. She knows I'm up. We're back and forth. And she goes, we need to plan a just me, you, and Larry. That's her brother, my son.
Yeah.
Just us three going away. And we're going to do it. I'm figuring it all out. I just had the big party in Cancun. And my son did come. My daughter couldn't get her passport. Leave it at that. And but we're gonna figure it all out, and we're gonna go. So in the three of us, without anybody else, just the three of us, you know. And they love to party with their pop, and they love the stories. They know me, and they know I don't judge them. Like whatever they do, they do. They're all old enough to make their own choices. Again, 26 and 32, you know, they can do whatever. And my son is a great father. That is something I wasn't. And it's sad to say because I was away.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter once said to me a tough line. And I remember it, but I'm over it, meaning it doesn't... It's an educational point. I was disciplining my daughter. She was 15 at the time. And I got out. She was 13. So she comes up here. I try to help her. Mom was having a little trouble. And I'm disciplined. I can be a tough fucker, you know. And you know what she says to me? Where were you my whole fucking life?
That resonated with you, huh?
The heart, because she's right. Where was I? I was in prison because of my choices, not hers. She got over that too now. You know, like, okay, I can't blame my father for everything. I don't get away with shit now anymore either. She didn't get away then either, but it hit home. And it's something that always stuck in me that I wasn't like you. That's that guilt of us, you and the war in a way. It's, you don't realize it until you're older. And then, but then you get it and you see how that, even that was educational for them because they learned how to be on their own. They learned not to be the spoiled fucking kid or whatever the hell it is. And I think that's important.
Absolutely.
So your kids are doing well.
My kids are, I tell you, all my kids are college graduates. You know, they're all bachelor's degrees and up. They're doing real well. They're doing real well. And my kids.
When are you kicking them out?
You know, I don't know. They can stay there as long as they want. As long as they want. My oldest is getting married. I told you that a couple weeks ago. My oldest is getting married.
Yeah, that's why we couldn't do a show or something.
Yeah, we were planning the wedding. And I'm happy for them. Yeah, she's going to get married. It's a new chapter in our lives.
Like the guy? Or we got to kill him?
No, the guy's good.
We got to throw him a beating?
You know what? Maybe it's
just a little initial beating.
He's a good guy. He plays poker with me every Wednesday.
Bring him to my poker game. He'll really fuck us, you crazy motherfuckers. And then he's just saying, I better not fuck up in this fucking game. There's too many guys that are going to bury me out in this farm.
You know, these kids are different, though. They're different. He's a young guy. He's 24, something like that. But they weren't like us when we were younger. He didn't have to grow up rough and tough. He grew up around here. Originally, he's from New York, you know, but he's around here. I don't have to worry about him. I grew up, people have to worry. I can see why my wife's parents were saying, look, this fucking kid, you don't want to be with him. He's a bad guy. I don't got to worry about him. I know he's a good guy. You know, so I'm blessed with that.
Thank you know, whatever they are, and I always stay away from my kids' relationships because they'll call me. And I tell people this one advice. I even tell their spouses or their significant others. I said, listen, there's two things. You're with my daughter. Don't ever call me and bitch about my daughter in any way, shape, or form, because you lose.
It's my daughter. Every time.
Don't give a fuck. Yeah. She could be wrong. I'm not going to say anything. Mm-hmm. Now, when I see her, I'll say, what are you, a fucking idiot? Yeah. But that's my daughter. Don't ever fuck. And I tell anybody who wants to listen, don't ever, ever go against your kid in anything yep. to anybody. Right or wrong. Now, with them and privately, different things. But don't ever have something that kid, no, set up. That's my kid. Don't want to talk about it. End the fucking story. Done. My kids, whatever. And I tell that because you'll get people try to pit families, you know, oh, he was wrong, he cheated, he did this, or he was a first of all, don't come to me. Number one, get through your own fucking problems.
Yep.
Number two, don't ever say anything against my son because you lose, or my daughter, you lose, period. Even though they're wrong. I mean, if you want to consider right or wrong, you lose. Yep. My kid. End of story.
That's it.
Can't win.
Yeah.
Privately with you, I might say, yeah, fucking idiot. I wish you fucking would have come to me. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Don't do that. I tell that, you know, my kids is funny. As you know me, when my daughter was always scared to introduce a boyfriend to me because she grew up, she was 13 now, her dad's out of prison, dad's fucking, yeah. Still got a little bit of an animal. And you know, then they look me up in the reading. You know, I don't want to meet him. You know, I mean, yeah, I don't want to meet the guy. As I tell him, I said, listen, there's two rules I have with my daughter. You can have to do whatever you want. You're a big boy. You ever put your hands on my daughter.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote. That's it. And other than that, listen, you're going to have your problems. You do mm-hmm. your thing. I don't want to hear about it.
And to touch on that note, though, I agree with you 100%. I've been with my wife for 30 years. September 18th, we spent 30 years together. And I can honestly say I never, ever, even thought about ever raising my hand up to my wife.
You know, I talk about that on this podcast all the time. I was a pretty bad guy. My two ex-wives were very good friends. Every woman will tell you, I was a bad guy too back in the day. I mean, I fucking would go out for a week, 3 days, broads on the side, everything you can imagine. Mm-hmm. I used to tell my wives, listen to me. Here's the deal. Don't ever put your hands on me because I'll treat you like a man. And I will never, ever, and I never in my life hit a woman
yeah.
or elderly person or even my robberies, I never hurt people because yeah. they're civilian. If you were in my business, that was a whole different yeah. animal. But don't think you can put your hands on someone, period. And any man who hits a woman is bullshit. And, you know, they'll come up, oh, she did that. Yeah. If I'm with a girl now and she hit me, I would walk away and she'd never see me ever in her fucking life.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It was just a man. Out. There's never. That's a threshold I have.
Yeah.
And vice versa. I will never put my hand. I'm 250 pounds. I can fight. What does it prove I can fucking hit a 125-pound girl yeah. and knock her out?
Yeah.
What am I, a fucking superstar? No, I'm a fucking jerk-off. How do you do that? That's what, you know, in New York we call it, that's a jerk-off. There's a jerk-off and a jerk-off. That's a fucking jerk-off. Because yeah. I don't have to prove, you don't have to prove. Yeah. So we've done what we needed to do in life to prove who we were.
Exactly.
We don't need to fucking show our power against somebody yeah. we can. That's why to this day, I always help young kids or help people or help women. I can't stand people who pick on weak. I hate bullies.
Yeah.
Can't stand bullies. I tell a bully, you want to fucking pick on someone? Pick on me.
Yeah.
See what happens. You might beat me, but I tell you what, you're going to know what happened. Just pick on someone who's going to hit you back.
Yeah.
Don't pick on a fucking girl that, you know, it's bullshit. And I'll never do that. And my wives will tell you that. But they are. No matter what relationship, they say, man, I knew never to fucking, no matter, I remember my one wife, I go away for fucking, I don't know, 4 days. I'm in Atlantic City with a hooker. I bring her back, bring her to the bar in Brooklyn with fucking, you know, we're working this girl, the whole fucking crazy shit. I come home, jump in the shower, and my fucking wife is, fuck, where you going? I'm blowing water over the fucking door. Just get the fuck out of here. I'm fucking, I ain't been home in three or four days. She fucking gets a fucking man. I just get dressed, I fucking thing. I'm walking out of the house, and she looking at me, and she got keys. She wanted to hit me with those fucking keys so bad. She throws them, not at me. She breaks a curio cabinet with those precious moment shits. That's your shit. I don't give a fuck. And I walk out of the fucking house. Never, you know. But and yeah. To this day, we're good friends. We're all good friends, you know. And I like that because life is too short, man.
Life is short. And I think you need to.
You and I have seen so much death. I've seen a lot of death. And you do, of course. Man, it could happen tomorrow, man. I could drop dead tomorrow. And I always say, you know, people who know it, if you're listening to this, if I drop dead, there's going to be a fucking party. I actually have money in my will for a $25,000 party. I'm talking fucking bands. Ain't no shit. Yeah. It's get fucked up. You want drugs, wine. I don't give a fuck what you want there. Yeah. And the people who know, and I have very successful people that are going to manage that, it will be the biggest bash in the world. That's where I want to be remembered. Yeah. I don't want to be remembered, you know, in the fucking... You know how it is. I've been to enough fucking funerals.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. So, and it can happen. But if it happens, you know what, Juan? I'm okay with it.
Me too. If I drop dead, I know that I'm a good man. I'm doing my part, and I'm a better man. You know, my neighbor could tell you, it could be a spider. I'll put it in a cup and I'll take it outside.
Yeah, I know. Fucking, we kill that fucking recluse, that fucker.
Yeah, that thing jacked you up.
Oh, fuck it. Jacked me up. But I understand that. And listen, that's just your own. First thing I asked Juan is to use a Buddhist because my manager is a Buddhist and he's the most peaceful, fucking loving. I'm telling you, there's something about his aura that is, I wish I had.
Yeah.
And I don't, but... I'm getting there. He even says I'm getting there. I'm getting better at it, you know, but everything's a work in progress.
That's where I'm at in life. Right now, it's not about the money. It's about having emotional intelligence, being able to process things intelligently, conflicts in life, and I don't have to be angry now. I don't have to argue. I try to process things pragmatically, you know, and live the best life I can live right now. Because I could have been dead a long time ago. I'm not. So I'm just going to be the best man I could be. You know, I don't have nothing to prove to nobody.
No, we got our breaks. Yeah. We didn't get the bullet in the head or the bullet wherever and didn't get whacked. Or I was stabbed twice and shot out of fucking my ear.
Yeah.
Shot and stabbed twice. I got fucking scars and fucking knife wounds. Why am I not fucking dead?
Yeah.
There's a reason. I'm not a religious guy. I'm a little bit spiritual. I don't believe in any specific religion. I'm an agnostic, which means there's something.
Yeah.
Prove it to me kind of deal.
Yeah. You know, I'm in the same boat.
Because I've seen so much bullshit
in
this world. And guys, fucking, we used to call them. They'd go to prison, pick up the Bible. When they left prison, they'd pick up their crack pipe and go home.
Yeah.
You know, and listen, whatever it takes for you to get by, I don't judge people. Yeah. I really don't in anything you want to do. That's why this station doesn't judge people for race, ethnicity, sexuality. Be whatever you want. Do whatever the fuck you want.
If you're not hurting nobody, you're not hurting me.
Absolutely. Whatever you want to do in here that's no kids. You know, I mean, you want to have orgies upside down.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck you want to do. As long as you're not hurting others. Respect people the way you want to be respected and live your life. If more people would think like that, we put more and more laws and bullshit on people that, you know, common sense should handle most of that shit.
That's so true.
But we don't. Yeah. All right, we got to close. What do you want to say? You want to say anything to young people out there or the people listening?
Well, yeah, I do. I do want to say something. I'm going to use you as an example. I'm always watching podcasts. I'm always watching YouTube. And I listened to you for many years. And I think I was drawn to you because... You lived your life, you wild life. But I always believe everyone's redeemable. Everyone deserves a second chance. And look at you. You did what you did, but you're giving back. And I resonated with that. And I was like, this guy, he's great. That's why I always Every time your video, I'm clicking. Oh, shit, new video's up. I'm clicking. I'm watching.
It's so funny that you live next to Rob, who I know for 10 years.
And people don't know the story. Yeah, if I can say that story, I'll tell you the story. I'm with Robert, good friend of mine. I just moved into this neighborhood.
Rob's a mutual friend of ours.
Mutual friend. So I'm doing a poker night, and I'm literally just, I'm watching your videos on it. And Rob has his shirt with you. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm like, this is the Matrix again. It's a glitch in the Matrix. This can't be right. Oh, yeah, I know Larry. He's a good friend. I'm like, what the? This is crazy. I'm just listening to this guy a couple of days ago, and here we are. I'm sitting with you talking. I'm my mind is blown.
And life, you know what? And now we're friends.
Yeah. Hey.
I believe in that.
Yeah, that's
I really believe that. And things happen for that reason. It's funny because I was at the cigar bar when I met you the first time.
Yeah.
And Rob says, hey, Larry, you know, I was going, I jump in there late. And Rob comes and says, hey, there's a guy who wants to meet you. He's my neighbor. He's a great guy. He's a more vet. And he listens to your show and all that. So I come out and said hello. And then I was thinking when Rob told me about your story, I said, you know, let me bring him on a podcast. I think he'd be an interesting guy. And you are, obviously, and you're a good guy. And it's funny how that happens, you know. And it's funny, like, even now with the platform, my whole platform, and we grew this thing. We were one of the fastest growing channels on YouTube. We did 1.3 million already. And we had a million in like a year. So we gained about 20,000 a month, millions. Yeah. And it's still going great. But we always close. I do this. This is me. It has to be on a good message of do something good for somebody else. Stop at a toll booth and say hello to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, open a lane.
Say thank you to people.
Open a door for a fucking...
Yeah.
Grab a package for that old lady and walk into her car. Just do one good thing a day. And you know what? It's going to blossom. You'll feel good about things in life. And it's something I do believe and always did. I was always the Robin Hood kind of... Listen, I'm not justifying my fucking life. Because I was a bad guy. You didn't want to run across me back in those days. And even the bad things I did with robberies, but... I always try to call it what it is. I didn't want to ever, and I never did, hurt a civilian, we used to call it. You know that because you know the mob guys in fucking Philly. You know, we didn't hurt civilians. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like you're going after a civilian because I wasn't shaking down a neighbor or fucking. Now, if you're a drug dealer, you didn't want to deal with fucking drugs in my neighborhood because you're paying me. I didn't make you fuck me drilling drugs, but you're paying me.
Yeah.
Or bookmaking and stuff. But I appreciate what you said, and I could see that with you, just caring for your kids, caring for anybody. I can never see you turning a person away who needed help, period.
Never, no.
And that's just the way you are. And I think a lot of our tragedies, or you call them the wars or whatever, has also made us who we are. You know, people ask me all the time, the great question is, Larry, do you regret anything? And I said, no. And I go, regret's the worst word in the world. Would I change things? Bill Gates said he'd change things.
Yeah.
Fucking richest guy in the world. I tell you, of course, that doesn't mean he's not gonna, he just would take the bad away or whatever we would do, obviously. But regret is something, it's terrible. It's like the word hate.
Yeah.
I hate the word hate. How's that? The word hate only hurts you because the guy that you hate don't give a fuck what you do, doesn't even know you hate him, don't give a shit or whatever. And it's eating you inside hate. So I don't like the word hate. I dislike things. I dislike politics. I dislike this, like this. But I don't hate.
That's why I listen to a lot of the Stoics. The Stoics from the Roman times. And they tell you, look, you don't have control of what people do. You have control how you react to the situation. You know, and I live by that. You know, I try not to get upset. I can't. If you hate me, that's none of my business what you care about, what you say about me. I have control how I react to that. So I try to react in a peaceful, calm way because I can do that now.
You got to come play cards with us.
Definitely, definitely.
Absolutely. We're going to close, everybody. I know it's been a long one. Have a lot of fun. Boy, time flies.
Yes, yes. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
You've been great. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm with Juan Rodriguez, a war vet from Iraq, Kosovo. Great guy and a good man, and that's what counts. I'll thank his buddy Rob for bringing him around. And everybody out there, come on, make one good choice a day. Keep it going. We're here every Monday and Friday at 8 a.m. This is The Real Deal with Larry Lawton. Have a great day. See you next time.